Hi, and welcome to the Passionistas Project podcast. We're Amy and Nancy Harrington, and today we're talking with Debbie Arcangelis. Debbie started her career as a photojournalist and traveled the world to teach art to kids. She's admitted to starting businesses where she followed the money and not her passion, and did not always have great success. Now through her project, The Offbeat Life, Debbie shares the insights she gained on her adventures with others through her podcast, mentorships, and a website full of resources to help you live the offbeat life of your dreams. So please welcome to the show, Debbie Arcangelis.
Hey, ladies. I'm so excited to be here.
What's the one thing you're most passionate about?
For me, honestly, it's just having freedom. I think for a really long time, I was trying to gain that with so many different things. I thought it was gaining freedom through money and so many other things, but it's just finding freedom through things that you really love. And I think that's what I've been trying to seek this whole time. And that's why I've been doing so many things. That introduction, there were so many things that I did, but I think it led me to finally understand that at the end of the day, it had to be able to give me that sense of freedom that I needed for myself.
And so how does that translate into your day-to-day life and what you do for a living?
For a really long time, I was like everybody else. I did a 9-to-5 and I was really unhappy because I'm kind of one of those people that I just like making my own schedule, being my own person, and being really an entrepreneur. So what I ended up doing was I started to create all of these businesses and failed a whole bunch of them to finally get to this point to figure out what I really wanted to do, which was to also help other people create that freedom that they needed for themselves. And that's what I do. So now I'm location independent. I answer to myself and some clients, of course, because you still need to make that money. But at the end of the day, I was just thinking about this the other day. I was cleaning the house and I was saying to myself, it's the middle of the day and I'm doing this. And I'm pretty damn happy that I'm cleaning the house instead of doing a commute, like especially in New York City. And I see people going to the subway every day and I'm like, oh my God, thank God that's not me.
Tell us a little bit about what the offbeat life is and why you ultimately decided to start it.
I had mentioned before I was doing a regular 9-to-5 and I honestly had a panic attack every 4 months. I don't know what it was, but every 4 months, like clockwork, I would have it. And I used to be a photojournalist and I used to travel a lot and I really loved that. And I thought, well, I need to do something that's more stable and I love children. So I went back to school to become a therapist for children with autism. And I really enjoyed that. But at the end of the day, there was just something missing in my life. And so after I had all of these panic attacks for about 2 years or longer, I just said to myself, I can't take this anymore. I need to do something because I needed to look into myself and realize that I was a cause of my own misery. It wasn't anyone else. It was me. So I was the only person that could change this. So I really looked at myself and I talked to a coach and she asked me the question, are you just wanting to travel because you want to do it and it's a passion of yours? Or is it something that you are doing because you're trying to escape from what you really need to do with your life? And that was kind of like a light bulb, like an aha moment for me. And I said, oh my gosh, yeah, that's what I've been doing. So then I started to dig deeper within myself. And I said, who are the people that I really look to and say, I love what they do and I love what they're doing with their lives? And honestly, it's the people that I have met throughout my travels who were location independent, who had their own businesses. They were helping other people build this really rich life. And a friend of mine introduced me to a podcast. And I said, I love talking to people. Why don't I just do this? So it didn't start out as something I was supposed to do for a living. After 6 months of doing it, sponsorships just started coming to me. And I said, oh my gosh, I can make money from this. This is crazy. So that's how it started. And 2 years later, I'm here. I'm doing it full time. And I really love it.
We want to kind of take you back a little bit. So you were born in the Philippines and your mother moved to the United States when you were 2 and you stayed behind. So why did your mother decide to come to the U.S. and why didn't you come with her?
In the Philippines, this is really the norm. This is not something like not many people do, this is a lot of people in the Philippines and I'm sure in other places around the world, is that there's not a lot of jobs in the Philippines. So in order for my family to have a better life, my mom had to come to the United States to work. And I don't know if you or some of your listeners know this, but it takes a really long time for you to actually petition your family to come to the United States. It takes years sometimes. Sometimes you may get lucky and it'll take a little bit shorter than that. But I have a very interesting childhood in that my dad actually ended up leaving his job, and he used to travel as a merchant marine, and he left that so that he can take care of me full time while my mom came to the United States and started working, and she worked her butt off to do that. So she left when I was two to honestly give us a better life. Otherwise, we would still be living in really bad conditions. And I remembered growing up there until I was about 5 or 6. We were living in, you see on the internet, those really late shows or commercials on TV where they live in shacks. That's honestly where I used to live. So my mom had to make that decision to leave me at 2 years old to make that sacrifice in order for us to eventually come here and have a better life. So she couldn't bring me or my dad because the petition system at that time, even now, it takes a really long time for you to bring your family to the United States.
You eventually did get to the United States and came to New York. So talk about how that changed your life.
I was telling a few people this. It's really crazy. The thing that I remember the most after stepping foot in the United States was how greasy the food was. I remembered eating my first pizza. I know you're saying, you know, life-changing moment, but for me, eating my first United States New York pizza was life-changing because I know, like right now, I really love the New York City pizza. I mean, it's a staple. Everybody loves it. But when I first tasted it, it was so disgusting. I can't even tell you. Because in the Philippines, you ate rice, vegetables, and fish, and you didn't really have greasy food. And over here, that's what you do. So my childhood definitely changed. It changed drastically. The way I lived was completely different. You know, my mom would buy me shoes just to buy me shoes. You know, that was kind of unheard of. And I would have like a ton of shoes. And my mom is a shopaholic. So she would buy me all of these clothes. And in the Philippines, you know, you get it here and there, but it wasn't like that. And I was just like, the consumerism here is completely different from what I'm used to. So that's one of the biggest changes. And obviously, your living conditions gets better. And then obviously, because my mom came to the United States, it was better before I even left, because then she started sending back money. And then when I came here, you know, the language barrier, I had to learn the language to do that. I had to assimilate to the culture and really make friends with new people that I didn't really know the language. And also at that time, I believe probably 3 to 4 years after I came here, now it was my dad's turn to leave to go back to work. So because he traveled like 8 to 10 months out of the year, I only saw him 2 to 3 months out of the year too, because he went back into the merchant marines. So until I was about 18, I really only had one parent in my life for the most part. So it's kind of like living with a single parent, but they were still together. So it was just another change in my life that happened that way.
What were you most interested in when you were a kid, and why did you decide to study what you studied when you got to school?
So I was really interested in the arts. Everything I could create, anything, that was really what I was interested in. When I was younger, it was painting, and then I did charcoal, and really that's what I was focusing on. And then I even went to FIT for advertising and marketing, and I hated it. And then I went to school for art education. I became an art teacher, and it just, everything was in the arts. And I didn't really know what I wanted to do, but I knew it was going to be something in the arts. And if you know any immigrant families, you know that's like a no-no. We're expected, especially the Filipinos, most Filipinos you'll probably meet are like nurses. So when I didn't go into that field, my parents were not happy about that. And because I also ended up not choosing the advertising field, I was just all over the place. So I knew that I needed to keep going because I couldn't become a nurse because it was just not something that I could do. And I knew that I would hate that lifestyle. And I just kept going and I didn't listen to what anybody told me when it came to that. And I just kept pursuing it. And honestly, I'm so glad that I did, because even through all of that confusion and pain and everything that I had gone through to figure myself out, at the end of the day, it was all of my choices, and I don't have any regrets because of that. So I'm pretty happy with that choice.
So how did you get into photojournalism, and what kind of work were you doing at that point?
When I was in college, one of my mentors, which was my photography professor at that time, he really introduced me into photojournalism. And at that time, there was really no Instagram. I was developing film, black and white, by myself, you know, by hand. And I had a studio in school and I was doing everything. And then he started giving me assignments to just go to different places that I could talk to people and interview them. And that was also one of my main passions, was just interviewing people and getting their stories from them. So that's really where my passion for photojournalism came from. And then I started getting work from NGOs right after college, once I graduated. And before that, I started getting showings here in New York City and other parts in the United States. And then eventually, after a few years, after working with a bunch of NGOs in Central and South America and the Middle East, I got invited by the UN to do a show in China for that. And honestly, at that point, my biggest goal was to work with the UN and do something with them. And I felt like I reached my goal to do that. And at that point, I was very, very burnt out. I was doing a lot of traveling and I was working with a few NGOs that I did not really like what they were doing. I was seeing where the money was going instead of the people that it was supposed to go to. I was seeing where it was really going. And I just was fed up with it. And after I did that show in China with the UN, I just left and I didn't touch my camera, I think, for a few years after that because of the burnout.
So you founded the Offbeat Life. Tell us a little bit more about what your day-to-day life is like now.
My day today can be completely different. What I do with my podcasting, and then I also run my website, and then obviously social media, they all go together. So a lot of my income is different. It can either be social, the website, the podcast. Sometimes I have private clients that do other things with, so it can all be different. So it's just making sure that I schedule everything the right way. Obviously, it's different when I'm traveling and when I'm at home. So when I'm at home, I am a huge believer in actually creating a schedule for myself, because otherwise I'll just be all over the place because there's no one to really hold me accountable except for myself. I have assistants, so I need to make sure that everything is getting done. So, I mean, every day it's just waking up, depending on the day, maybe 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, going for a walk or doing a workout, and then, you know, doing like tours or routines, and then after that, I have a checklist, a daily checklist of what I need to do that day. And then I just follow it through. And then if I finish it quicker than I have the whole day, I don't try to do a million things in that day. If it's not on my checklist, unless it's an emergency, I don't do it. And I'm very strict with that because I also want to make sure that I have a life outside of work, because it can get really hard if you're working for yourself to make sure that you have that time for yourself and the people that you love. And to tell you, ladies, in the beginning when I did this, it really took a toll on my personal life because I was working full time with my day job and then this. So it was working like 16, 18, sometimes even 20 hours a day. And I knew that I needed to change that. But for the most part, you really have to do that. I know it's really hard, but you have to work really hard to get to a point where you feel comfortable enough not to work as hard. So it's like leaving a 9-to-5 to work at like a 6-to-10 sometimes, you know? So
you're listening to the Passionistas Project podcast and our interview with Debbie Arcangelis. To find out how Debbie can help you live the offbeat life of your dreams, visit theoffbeatlife.com. Now here's more of our interview with Debbie. Is there one lesson you've learned so far during your journey that sticks with you?
Well, there's definitely a lot of failures. You probably have heard this before, but I feel like the more I fail, the better I actually get, because it gives me so many different lessons. I think for me, I embrace the failures now, and you just learn from it. And I think there's a quote that also says, it doesn't get any easier. You just keep getting better. So I truly believe in that. I think after a while you do something, you feel like, oh, this is getting easy. No, it's not. It's just, you just got really good at it. Because everything is hard. There's so many things that are really hard in life, but if it comes easy, then everybody would do it, right? So I think failing is a good thing and you should embrace it.
So what's been your biggest professional challenge and how did you overcome that?
I think my biggest professional challenge has been, well, for most people, when I started, I didn't know how to create income from it. I didn't know how to price myself. I was intimidated with certain companies and brands, not allowing myself to rest and allowing my business to really get into my personal life. And that was a huge challenge for me. And I actually spoke to my audience about this, is that my partner and I, we were together for like 15 years and we ended up separating for a year because of all of the challenges that we were going through because of our businesses. And just learning from that was really huge, and changing and kind of changing myself as an entrepreneur and as a person and how I deal with certain things. That was a huge, huge thing for me. But I guess I have like the same challenges that most, you know, individuals who are entrepreneurs are doing. It's like, you know, how do you balance everything? How do you create income? How do you market? I mean, every day, honestly, there's a new challenge for me. And I think as an entrepreneur and for somebody who really wants to do this type of lifestyle, you really have to be the type of person who is just willing to learn and to be humbled every single day, because you realize that you really don't know a lot.
What's the most rewarding part of what you do?
Everything that I do now. I know that sounds really like, oh my God, whatever. It's not true, but it is. Meeting people through my podcast is so rewarding. Some of my closest friends now that I have are from my podcast, my job. I get to travel. I do this for a living. People pay me to do it, which is ridiculous. Sometimes I look at what I do, and sometimes when I'm traveling, I'm like, I can't believe someone would pay me to do this. This is ridiculous. And just learning, I feel like every day, again, I feel like I am getting so much out of it, and I really want to give more because for me, it's not balanced right now. So I need to give more, actually, because of everything that it's given me and the type of lifestyle that I'm able to live right now because of the decision that I made. And I'm just really thankful for all of that.
So do you have like one most memorable experience from all of your travels?
One of my last trips as a photojournalist actually was in Guatemala. And I was in this tiny little village and I was meeting an NGO there. And this is really kind of what broke everything for me, because I was seeing that the people who were in charge of the organization, they had this huge mansion. They invited us to it. Meanwhile, the people that we were trying to help, they had no roofs and their houses were falling apart. And there was a flood that just came through like maybe a few months ago, and they were still trying to get money from it. Meanwhile, these people who were the owners of the organization had this incredible house, and it just didn't sit right with me. But the person that really changed it for me, and I knew that I needed to do something else, was a woman who actually worked with this organization. And what she did was she took her own money and she asked other people from the United States to help her. And this is not money from that organization, by the way. This was her own money. And she would go to these people, and I went with her to photograph, and they were indigenous to the area. And what she would do is she would walk to every single person's house, ask them what they need, and then within the next few weeks or months, she would give them what they needed herself without this organization's help. And these people, the indigenous people that were working there, I used to walk with them from their house all the way down to the village. It took them a few hours, and a lot of them were barefoot. They didn't make a lot of money, maybe a few cents a day to sell like whatever it is that they were selling, maybe vegetables. And they would have children doing this as well. So I think it was definitely that moment that I realized that there are so many organizations that are not giving to the people what they need to give, and they were keeping a lot of it themselves, and I saw it firsthand. And then I also realized that there are people out there who are really incredible, who don't need to do this, and they just go out of their way. And when I was interviewing her, she was telling me her stories, and she didn't want anything. She didn't want to be photographed. She didn't want any attention. She just wanted to be there to help them, not just by giving them money, but also having them create more jobs for themselves, which was really incredible. So yeah, that was probably one of those moments that really changed my perspectives on helping people.
What about when you were a girl? What lessons did your mother teach you about women's roles in society?
Well, to tell you honestly, my dad had made more of an impact on me than my mom did, because even though I was here when I was still really young, she and I didn't have as close of a relationship as me and my dad did, because obviously he was the one that raised me since I was really little. And with my dad, what I really learned from him is he never really allowed me to think that there was anything different with me just because I was a girl. He let me do whatever it is I wanted. He told me to stand up for myself. He pretty much encouraged me to do whatever it is that I wanted to do. And there was never any talks about, you know, you're a girl, you need to do this, or you can't do this, a boy can do that. My dad never did that. So growing up, I never had this sense of like, well, I'm a girl, I'm supposed to do this, or, you know, if I was a boy, I could do this. Because I always grew up like with none of that from my dad. So it was just like, do whatever you want to do and just go for it like 110%, and you're going to achieve what it is that you're going to do. And I think I'm really grateful for that type of upbringing from him, because I never felt like there was anything as a female that I couldn't do just because of my gender.
And what about other influential female role models? Did you have female relatives or teachers or anybody that impacted you?
Well, honestly, right now, most of the female role models that I have are the people that I have interviewed for my podcast. And there's two women that I really love. And honestly, they're my role models because they're unbelievable. So one of them is Esther Jolie. She is one of the founders of thelocaladventurer.com, which is one of the top travel blogs in the world. She's like an incredible writer, an incredible photographer. And I'm just in awe of the way she just works, and she just does all of these amazing things. She's just so creative. And another person that I really, really love and is probably one of the most brilliant businesswomen that I know to date is Marissa Anwar, who is the founder of Darling Escapes. It's another travel blog, but she also is like a huge, she's probably one of the only females in the AI spectrum and industry. She's done so many other businesses. She does like AI, she does travel industry, she does real estate. She's just amazing. So those two women are honestly my role models.
And what about cultural heroines? Do you have favorite cultural heroines?
For me, a heroine is somebody that I've seen firsthand, right? Because there could be so many things that we don't see behind. And for me, the people that I'm really in awe of are the people that I have really witnessed what they are capable of. And the women that my family, especially, they came from like literally the slums in the Philippines to now being like engineers and nurses and doctors. And then for those two women that I talked to you about, Esther and Marissa, they just are beyond incredible when it comes to business.
What's your secret to a rewarding life?
Really, not to be too hard on yourself. And when you feel like you didn't do that well, you have to forgive yourself and to really just embrace things. Again, just be grateful for the things that you've accomplished and the things that you have. That's really it. And I think just surrounding yourself with supportive people who are going to be able to lift you up, and you can do the same thing to them and to do well to other people as well.
So what's your definition of success?
My definition of success is to be able to wake up every single day and just enjoy what it is. I mean, obviously, you know, there's even times where you don't enjoy what you do. You're just really happy. I don't think I can describe it. It's just waking up every single day and not dreading the day, you know, because I know a lot of people who are probably going to listen to this are still in their 9-to-5. And believe me, I've been where you are. I've had jobs where I literally had panic attacks the moment I woke up until the moment I came home. And then I would dread having to wake up the next day because I would have that panic attack again. Just being able to wake up and just being excited to do what you're going to be doing that day. Being able to wake up and knowing that you're going to make an impact somehow in your life and also other people's lives is really, for me, is a definition of success.
What's your proudest career achievement?
I don't know if I've had that yet. I think I need to be able to help more people first before I have that moment yet. But I think to date, it's when a listener emailed me and told me that I've helped them leave something that they really didn't want to do and to be able to prepare for it. And now they're doing it. And I was one of the things that was instrumental in that by listening to the interviews that I did. So that was actually one of the proudest moments I've had when I got that email from one of my listeners. First of all, I didn't think people were listening. And second, I didn't think it was going to impact somebody that much that it actually allowed them to change their life in such a good way. And I really just want to keep doing that in the future and just helping people and just guiding them to that.
Why is it so important to you to help other people in what you're doing for a career?
Because why should I be the only one to enjoy life like this? I feel like it should be spread around for everybody, right? I feel like the more people enjoy their lives, it's just better for everybody, you know? I think everybody should have the right to do that, is to have happiness with whatever it is that they're doing. If it's not the job that you hate, it's something else. And I think for me, it's just taking that leap and taking really a chance on yourself and believing in yourself to be able to do what it is that you want to do. And I think if I help as many people as I can to do that, it'll enrich their life, and I'm hoping they do the same thing for someone else, and it'll just be a cycle, especially for us women. You know, I think that's really important to do.
Thanks for listening to the Passionistas Project podcast and our interview with Debbie Arcangelis. To find out how Debbie can help you live the offbeat life of your dreams, visit theoffbeatlife.com. And it's not too late to subscribe to the very first Passionistas Project pack. Each box is filled with products made by women-owned businesses and female artisans to inspire you to follow your passions. Sign up for our mailing list at thepassionistasproject.com and get 10% off your first purchase. And be sure to subscribe to the Passionistas Project podcast so you don't miss any of our upcoming inspiring guests.